Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, over the past 2 weekends in Miami-Dade County, there have been a series of deadly shootings. Miami-Dade Police, along with the County Commission, announced Operation Summer Heat, a concerted effort by law enforcement to crack down on the ongoing violence. Here is Romania Dukes, one of the founders of Mothers Fighting for Justice, speaking at that press conference.
When I go home, I'm screaming and hollering because I can't get that gunshot out my head. Mm-hmm. I can't get that vision from my son trying to catch his breath. Mm-hmm. And in front of hundreds of people that was in the complex that didn't say they see nothing. Mm-hmm. Everybody seen something. We all know who our killers are. And it's up to our community to stand up. Our community needs to stand up and stand up now.
Today, the County Commission will be discussing the Peace and Prosperity Plan, which includes millions of dollars for addressing gun violence. Do these proposals have community buy-in? We're joined now by Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava. Mayor, I appreciate the time because I know that, the Commission's meeting to discuss this this afternoon. But help us understand the specifics of this Operation Summer Heat. Will police be focusing on specific neighborhoods? Will community policing be boosted? What's the plan entail? All right. I know that we have the mayor. I believe we are connected, but we're getting a little bit of a technical issue. We're going to see if we can't reconnect with her. So we're going to keep trying. Again, we have Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava. We're going to be talking about some of these programs, looking at the gun violence issue here in Miami. And as I mentioned, over a period of 12 days, we've had a series of shootings, and more than a dozen people have been killed and dozens more have been injured, shootings all around the county. We don't have a lot of information as to whether or not they are connected, how many of them might be gang related. But again, we are talking with police on that, tracking those stories. And again, the County Commission talking today, they're going to be talking about this Operation Summer Heat and also the Peace and Prosperity Plan. That's millions of dollars going into dealing with gun violence. Are these programs the kind of programs that are going to help solve this problem? What more can we do? Is it more policing, perhaps? All right. Again, I'm going to see if we have the mayor with us. Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, are you there? All right. So we don't have her yet, but I'm going to move over to, because we have another guest joining us. I have Lyle Muhammad. He's the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood in Miami-Dade County. Lyle, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. I'm grateful.
No, definitely thank you for the time. Now, we may still have the mayor coming up here in just a moment to talk about these programs, but I just wanted to ask you, you know, having lived in Miami as long as you have you ever seen anything like this? Over a period of just barely a couple of weeks, so we've seen so many shootings, one after the other?
The answer is absolutely yes. This scene has been played out over and over and over and over again throughout the years that critical issues have been ignored on how to address what we call root causes versus symptoms.
And again, the county talking about these programs that they're going to, you know, try to implement, thinking this may be the way to go. And I want to get your take on this. And again, I may have the mayor. We're just having these technical issues. Mayor Cava, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. All right. And hello, Commissioner. Yes.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate the time. I apologize for the technical issues. I wanted to start with this, Mayor. Help me understand the specifics of Operation Summer Heat. What exactly does it entail?
Well, Operation Summer Heat is stopping the bleeding. That's what we launched last week and is already paying dividends. It's making sure that our seasoned law enforcement agents are out on the scene. It's paying, making sure they're available. And it's also adding some technical advancements like more license plate readers, more crime analysts, a state attorney that's on site to handle these cases more swiftly. We're going to be adding to our crime lab as well to process cases more quickly, and it's putting the code enforcement people on the ground in teams with the police to go and inspect and shut down these illegal venues that are attracting
And that's been the big focus lately. There have been 140 arrests in a very short period of time because of code enforcement, cracking down on these illegal parties at homes. Why focus specifically on the code enforcement right now?
We know that people are gathering where they shouldn't, pop-up parties. People are just, itching to get out, and these things are popping up everywhere. And then on social media, they're being amped up, attracting folks that want to do harm, and then they don't care who's in the way.
So police made three arrests yesterday of young men linked to the graduation shooting, which was just a couple of days ago. These individuals are not being charged with the murders at the party, but rather for chasing people from the graduation party on the freeway. Police believe that the shooting was gang-related. Based on your understanding, to what extent is gun violence being fueled by gangs?
Yeah, so what the police tell us is that these kind of loose associated gangs, more like groups of people or crews, that they work together. They're not necessarily criminal enterprises, but they are folks that are making mayhem, targeting each other for competitive purposes, personal vendettas, a lot of retaliation. I'm sure that in some cases drugs are involved, or even fraud, I'm told, is a new kind of crime that these groups engage in.
So the commission is going to be voting this afternoon, or discussing this afternoon, the Peace and Prosperity Plan.
So 2:00 is the final vote, hopefully, at the special meeting that was called of the commission after it passed committee. And, then the hard work begins. So I'm very hopeful. There's been a lot of support expressed. And, we've been developing this plan based on the resolution that Commissioner Hardiman brought with the FTX dollars. But we know that that is just a piece of the puzzle. We know that these enforcement activities are essential so we can find these bad actors and bring them to justice and bring peace to the community. But we also know we have to invest in community groups, community efforts that are people that are on the ground and know the people that live there, that have the trust. These are things I've spent a lifetime doing this work. And this for me is a pinnacle of the work that I've done to make sure that our community is informed, is engaged, is able to take action and to be at the forefront.
And look, there's a lot of questions about this program. Does it deal with, violence that's happening now, or is it something for the long haul? We talked in April with Miami-Dade County Commissioner Keon Hardiman, one of the architects behind the proposal, and he said that the funding wasn't intended to go entirely towards policing, rather for long term. This is what he said.
When someone pulls the trigger in a neighborhood, that in and of itself is something that has a great effect on the people who live there, the people who work there, and anyone who considers moving to that neighborhood in the future. I mean, it affects property values. It affects school ratings. It affects a great number of things. And so if we can stem gun violence in a lot of our communities, we can increase the prosperity and really increase the economic development in those neighborhoods, because businesses would not be afraid to open there.
All right. Again, that was Miami-Dade County Mayor Keon Hardiman. Again, we're talking with Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava right now as the commission is getting ready to discuss how to spend $90 million on the issue of gun violence. And by the way, we also have Lyle Muhammad, the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood in Miami-Dade. He's hanging on the line. We're going to get back to him here in a moment. Mayor, you hear that. How do you respond to critics who say that we need solutions to gun violence now? This is long term. We need something now.
Yeah. So I think Commissioner Hardiman, who sponsored the resolution, is right on target. We need long-term solutions. But of course, we also need short-term, and that's why we have Operation Summer Heat. And that's why we're putting the resources into the 12 weeks of coordinated enforcement, the additional technology, the crime analysts, all the things I've mentioned. But if we don't do long-term investing in future potential shooters, we are never going to get ahead of this. And Circle of Brotherhood is the organization that has done really more than any organization to be on the ground in these hard-hit communities. And, my hat's off to Brother Lyle Muhammad, Leroy Jones, who was one of the founders, and the incredible Circle. They do so much and are the trusted ambassadors. And we know that we need to support them to be on the ground, and as well other programs that are working with our young people every day. The alternative, these are young people who've turned off and tuned out, and we need to have these trusted community mentors and advisors to help us.
You have a number of families over the past 2 weekends who've lost loved ones, or they're recovering in hospitals. You know, yes. What tangible services in Miami-Dade County are we offering those in grief?
Yeah, we do have victim assistance through the state attorney, through the police. We do have a circle of services now through my approach as mayor is to really serve our community. So we have a walking one stops where we go to blighted neighborhoods, affected neighborhoods, wherever there's a gun shooting, we go out. But truthfully, these families will never fully recover, and we need to reach out to them with a full circle of support through our county and through the network of programming throughout our county. And the faith community, of course, which has always stepped up in times of need.
Mayor, as you know, we came off a year of racial justice protests, putting a renewed focus on policing within Black communities. With Operation Summer Heat, you're talking about increasing police forces in these same communities that regularly are subject to incidents of police brutality. How do you balance this desire to slow down the rate of gun violence, but you also have to protect civil rights?
Absolutely. And of course, I'm an attorney. Public interest attorney by training. I've been very supportive of these protests and the need for reform. And I'm very proud because I do think that this police department has done a great job of moving forward with more neighborhood-based policing, more training. The training has actually been lengthened with more anti-bias training and mentoring to make sure that these officers do not respond with bias. I mean, this is something we have to attack head on. Most communities that are suffering this violence want more protection. But again, we need to make sure everybody understands short-term protection is only short-term protection. We must invest in these communities, neighborhood revitalization, real jobs, real economic development that will support the people in these communities to turn this violence and this really disinvestment around.
The county's independent civilian investigative panel was 4 months ago, but it's yet to have its first meeting. Should the public feel confident that, its officers are found to have committed, if the officers are found to have committed wrongdoing, that the panel is going to take action?
I can assure you on my watch that I am extremely supportive, frustrated at the delay, which really had to do with some confusion about the appointment process. But I think the fire is lit under these commissioners to make the appointments. I do not get an appointment, but I was the co-sponsor, co-prime sponsor with Commissioner Jordan, and I wanted it to go to a stronger version and I was blocked by the commission. So I am fully in support of making sure that there is accountability across county government, including with our law enforcement.
I'm going to finish with this. I mean, look, you've been applauded for the county's successful vaccine rollout during this pandemic, but now we're dealing with this issue, this pandemic of gun violence plaguing the county. Do you see gun violence as a public health issue? How do we deal with it?
I absolutely do. I've said that repeatedly. As I tell you, this is my life's work, and we are going to deal with it as such, which means a comprehensive approach, and we're going to be working across every sector, including the community, the faith, the nonprofits, the youth programming. We must work together to get this right, and that is exactly what I will do as mayor.
Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, again, the county set to discuss the proposed Peace and Prosperity Plan this afternoon. Mayor, I know you're running off to that. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Brother Lyle, too.
All right. I want to turn over now to Lyle Muhammad, again, the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood of Miami-Dade. And Mr. Muhammad, thank you so much for waiting. I appreciate that. Again, the technical glitch at the beginning. You just heard the mayor. Do you believe these plans, the summer heat plan, the Operation Summer Heat, that these are going to help solve the gun violence issue right now in the county?
My answer is no, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But I want to, first of all, respectfully to the mayor and to all human beings that are doing anything to try to make our world a better and more decent world, I bow to you and I take my hat off to you. But what I will not do is be silent when there are some obvious things that need to be addressed when blood is still being spilled in the streets. And so what I'm seeing right now, to be very direct, is that Miami-Dade County right now is mirroring what Black America mirrored under the Bill Clinton administration. And I want to remind us of all of those great and beautiful intentions and crime bills and safety advocates that were passed. But there were more Black people locked up under that administration. And he later apologized for it. And I'm saying there's some grave things that have not been included in the works that are being talked about right now. But the good thing about it is that the plan will bring services to more youth. That's a very positive thing, always. The other good thing about it is everything the mayor and the commissioners and the citizens need to stop crime and violence in our community is already in our community.
What's the communication like between your organization and the county commission, like the mayor, and with the police? Are you all talking to each other all the time?
Well, the beautiful thing about it is that there's some beautiful bonded relationships on all those levels. Let's just be clear about relationships. I don't know if you have any siblings, but siblings don't always see eye to eye. They don't stop being siblings, particularly when life matters are on the line. And there are some critical issues that are being lauded and talked about, but resources aren't showing. And it's showing me, as I sat in that commission meeting today, to be quite honest, that for the most part, we have no idea the trauma that our communities are currently under, what they actually need to address the trauma, and we actually have no clue what it's going to take in terms of balancing resources on the ground. Director Ramirez said it himself, family. We cannot police our way out of this situation. So why are all these immediate efforts poured into policing? There's a whole lot of other things that could be done to stem the tide of gun violence immediately.
So you look at this, you have two different programs here. You have Operation Summer Heat. This is trying to deal with the gun violence that's happening right now, as to where the other program is kind of the bigger picture. That's the one that, you know, the Peace and Prosperity Plan, that's over many, you know, a long period. You didn't completely buy into this Summer Heat program. So give me an idea right now, if I put it in your hands, what's one way, what's something we do right now that could slow the shootings down?
Yes, sir. I'll speak directly to that. But I want you to know my contention is also with the Peace and Prosperity Plan. I want to be clear on that, too.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about that.
Number one, you do not prevent gun violence with police presence. You have to allow and understand what needs to be done to transform a culture in probate minds. So you have to have the right people involved on the ground. And I'll be very honest with you, since 2009, we have introduced a community wellness program that led off by having what we call peacemakers. But for some reason, the value of what peacemakers do, it seems to be supported, then all of a sudden dropped. And then the violence begins to pick up all over again. So there's some very tangible things, and I will not in this form try to explain fully what that looks like.
I wanted to ask you, because I asked the mayor about the gang violence issue. What's your understanding of the state of gang violence in Miami-Dade County right now?
Gang violence is not only taking place in the streets right now. Gang violence is taking place in the commission right now. Gang violence is taking place right now. Just look at the violence that's in the street. Look at the Peace and Prosperity Plan. What it's missing are key elements that deal with culture, race, health, and justice core strings in terms of the trauma issues in our community.
All right. And you know what, Mr. Muhammad, I apologize because it looks like our connection is starting to go in and out. So I didn't hear a little bit of what you heard, what you said there. My apologies. I hope that we get this resolved here quickly. You said just a second ago, let me come back to something, that you also have issues with this Peace and Prosperity Plan. Again, this one architected by Commissioner Keon Hardeman. This is a long-term plan to try to deal with the problem. What problem do you have with this program?
Well, number one, I want to say, as I said at the outset, because they always want to pit us against.
Hold on one second. Mr. Muhammad, hold on one second for me. I apologize because it's cutting in and out a little bit too much. We're going to take a break here and try to reconnect. We're going to reconnect with you.
Okay.
And we're going to do it by phone. So, again, talking with Lal Muhammad, Executive Director of the Circle of Brotherhood. We're going to come back here in just a second. Again, apologize for all of these little technical glitches. That is just part of life when you deal with technology. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I want to get back to my conversation I was having here with Lal Muhammad, the Executive Director of the Circle of Brotherhood in Miami-Dade. Again, talking about this series of gun violence that we've dealt with over the last couple of weeks. Again, more than a dozen people dead and a few dozen injured in different shootings. And again, police not saying they're all linked, but that gang violence may be involved here. Okay, Mr. Muhammad, again, my apologies for the technical glitches, but I wanted to get back to what I said. Let's start over on this. Again, the commission is voting on the Peace and Prosperity Plan. This is a long-term plan, a plan started by Commissioner Keon Hardeman. But you have issues with it. What are your issues? Is there anything about it you like?
Well, I think the most positive thing that's important to know is that whether that's Commissioner Hardeman's plan or whether it's the mayor's plan or whether it's their plan together with the commissioners, is that there will definitely be more youth than currently now engaged in some productive activities and some growth and development. However, we keep on talking about addressing gun violence as a public health crisis, and to be quite frankly, this doesn't do it. And because it doesn't do that, it misses at a core root of what's needed right now. You see, some people only respond after the shooting. When the cameras come and then we do a press conference and talk about how terrible it is. But right now, all communities where shootings take place are completely, thoroughly immersed in trauma with no attention being paid to it and no proper support. And when you put inside of that over-policing, you're only building another powder keg.
You have $90 million in this plan. That's the money that's coming from the Miami Heat Arena deal. If you had access to any of that, how would you use it then? What would be, if not more policing, what's a better way?
You know, I had the honor of being asked to be a part of a beautiful coalition on behalf of the Circle of Brotherhood with the Healing and Justice Coalition. And we recently, just about 3 weeks ago, we took a trip to Newark, New Jersey, where when you talk about having on the ground gun violence initiatives, they actually lead the country. And at the same time, they also lead the country. They went last year without one police shooting at all. And when we looked at and examined the model and the work that they were doing, they looked right back at us because they see we have the same potential to do here. So we definitely appreciate the mayor applauding our work, but I have to be realistic and say that we have never come close to being properly funded for the work that needs to be done in our communities on the ground and what needs to be done. And we've never been properly supported for it with resources. That's just the plain truth. But the Healing and Justice Coalition definitely should be looked at.
What have you heard from victims? What have you heard from victims' families as to how the money should be spent or what they want to see done?
Victims' families right now are still reeling in so much pain. And what happens is, to be quite honest, we end up calling out a chorus that we all sing so bad, because if you look at the idea of emotion over intellect, when these murders take place, everybody wants vengeance. Everybody wants justice. And it tricked those who are in leadership and including the feds and looking at it as an isolated incident. And we keep on victim chasing. If you locked up every single diabolical human being right now today, you'd have to make room for a whole nother boatload tomorrow. So why are we pretending like this is a solution? It's heart-wrenching.
I come back to this issue of gangs, and I'm wondering, have you ever been able to speak to any former member of a gang? I want to understand the process of trying to resolve conflicts before they turn violent. Because as you said, it just becomes this back and forth of vengeance. How do you stop that?
You stop it by looking at what God has given Miami-Dade County in the Circle of Brotherhood. And we are an organization of black men from various walk of life, some from those very same streets, some who have caused some of that same violence and destruction, but who have been transformed. Only those who've been there and done that can go back and get those who are doing it. But when we make a cry for what we need to support our work, it gets put in a box or a silo. And so that's the most important thing. You have to involve the right who in going after individuals. And my answer to that is exactly yes. You would be shocked and surprised how much bloodshed we stopped from happening in Miami-Dade County because of the work that we do in conflict resolution between gangs. And really, with this latest violence eruption back in January, if there was proper coordination with the police department, we could have saved several more lives. But again, over-policing versus human transformation, that's an issue.
You know, I think back to also what I heard earlier. We had played the cut, from Romania Dukes. And she's talking about the community needs to speak up because they know who's doing it. Why aren't people talking?
So tell me this. Why aren't back deals? By the way, that deal is already passed. So let's not pretend like 2 o'clock is such a major thing. Just being very honest about it. It's already solidified and passed as it should be. Let's be crystal clear. So when you look at people talking about say something, why don't we say something about all the things that are going wrong in the police department? You can't keep asking the community to do what politicians and police departments aren't vehemently asking their own people to do the same thing of. And you cannot change a person's behavior without understanding the mindset and causing human transformation. And I'll be honest, that's what we do better than anybody on the planet. So put us to work. We got to go out and create cadres of individuals and watch us eradicate gun violence through human transformation.
How much money is it going to take?
You know, I remember putting together a budget. We had a visit from the White House, actually, back in December by way of the city of Miami. And he was so impressed with our work and our program. He said, what would it currently cost to spend all of the services you're currently provided and to do it effectively? You know, the sad part about it, it wasn't any more than $5.6 million. And we've always been asked to put our programs inside of another program. And another thing about the Peace and Prosperity, the list of experts that they engage is way too short. And there's some missing cultural analysis that need to be done to properly engage human transformation and trauma.
And when you talk about that transformation, I want to dig a little, a little deeper into the process. Tell me more about the process of that transformation.
The process, first of all, I'll give you an example. And with first of all of our programming include transformative and healing from trauma incidents, all of them, no matter what they are. And when we started our employment training initiative, we recognized right away that the biggest problem is you can't take someone who's just coming from jail or who's just never been employed and put them in a trade. They have to deal with life on life's terms. So we have a 4-week work readiness, self-improvement class that deals with those very aspects. So you have to get them in a captured environment, number one. All of our programs have that element. And you have to have the right facilitator who understands both scientific modalities of human transformation and the realities of what our people are really going through. And with that, people immediately take home new practices and give birth in the home to a new cultural reality that can reduce crime and violence.
I want to finish with this, Mr. Muhammad. The other thing, too, I wanted to ask was about the types of weapons that some of these folks are using. What's the response on how we keep those kind of weapons out of their hands? Is there a way to do that? Is that policing or is that something else?
Yeah, the only thing that can keep those weapons out of their hands are the men that I just described to you, to be quite honest. We live in a country that God is gun, and gun is God. So let's just be crystal clear. I've seen for myself in cases where guns easily can come into a community, even by trainloads. So if we didn't want the guns in our community, we would have the guts to stand up and pass the legislation. How dare America just point at our urban America? How dare America just point at our suburban youth who are suffering from mental illness? This country's suffering from mental illness because we love violence. We love it. It's in our television appetite. It's in our movie appetite. We love violence. So until we honestly assess ourselves, we're going to continuously see these things repeated over and over and over.
He is Lyle Muhammad, Executive Director of the Circle of Brotherhood. Mr. Muhammad, thank you so much for the time, for the insight. I don't know if you're going to be over at the commission meeting discussing with them as they go over the plans, but we'll definitely bring you back in. There's a lot to talk about on this issue. Hopefully we find those answers.
I want to thank you, and I just want the audience to know my passion is love because we're bleeding, and we know what needs to be done, and we need help. It's just passion.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I do appreciate it. I also want to mention, too, that our reporter, Daniel Rivero, you'll have more on the county commission's vote later this afternoon on All Things Considered. Well, still to come, Puerto Rico is shrinking in population. Why? And can it be turned around? Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. The 2020 census data paints a stark picture for the U.S. A declining birth rate and many waiting to have children, the nation experienced its slowest growth rate since the Great Depression. The situation is even more severe in Puerto Rico. The territory lost 11% of its population over the last decade. Financial bankruptcy, natural disasters, and of course the pandemic have driven families off the island and brought them here to the mainland. What can be done to reverse the trend and to preserve Puerto Rico's future? Well, joining me now is Dr. Luis Perici Guerra. He is the director of the Center for Biostatistics and Bioinformatics at the University of Puerto Rico. Luis, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you to you. It's my pleasure.
You know, you've been in Puerto Rico now for 20 years. You're originally from Venezuela, but tell me, over the last two decades, how has the island changed? Things that tangible differences that you've seen?
We have changed a great deal, no question about it. And I consider my responsibility being director of the Center of Biostatistics and Informatics of the Faculty of Natural Sciences of University of Puerto Rico here in Río Piedras in San Juan, to assemble a number of scientists and graduate students to study something that no one else seems to be interested in studying or in focusing or in trying to get public policy, which is what we can see as the coming population collapse of Puerto Rico.
And you see, but yes. If I can come back to say, you personally, besides this study, you know, you personally, what have you seen? I mean, as you travel through the island, 11% decline is massive.
Right. You see, when I arrived here, we had a population of 3.8 million in 2001, 2004, to be more exact, 2004, we have the maximum of 3.8. I mean, if we measure the population again in 2017, we have a decline of 16.5%. And you see, everybody can see the Maria, the earthquakes, the pandemia, and the immigration. But what is not obvious is the most important and dangerous cause of the population collapse, which is not, it adds to, but it's not immigration, is the collapse of the fertility in the island.
The fertility of the island, okay.
Puerto Rico is the jurisdiction of the whole of the United States, which is a complete outlier. It's the lowest of every jurisdiction in the states. And not only that, it's only comparable with South Korea and perhaps Japan, but nothing else close in the whole of the Americas.
So I'm going to look at the fertility rates here in a moment. Let's look at, perhaps what's led to that, because what we're talking about basically is that people are either waiting a lot longer to have children or they're not having kids at all. And part of, I think the biggest thing may be just the fact that what's the future of the island? Why have children if you see everything is in collapse? Let's start with the economic collapse from 2008 and the impact that had on the island. How did that pressure Puerto Ricans? How many did it push out? Did they come to the mainland? What happened after that collapse that probably started leading Puerto Rico down this decline?
Right, as I said, it's very clear and it's very apparent, this idea that the people is immigrating and that is the reason for the situation we're having here. This is not the only reason, and this is not even the main reason. The main reason is that the population is not producing children in not even close to what used to be. But not only that, is that the situation is not on control and it's going down and at speed, which is really, really worrisome.
So what's causing it? What's the biggest thing? Because I wanted to look at, there was the crash in 08. You've had earthquakes, you've had hurricanes. Now the pandemic. What's been the biggest reason for it?
Well, that's something that is one of the things we want to find out, is that we have to study the problem. And the latest survey and study, social study that was made about the family and the reproduction and so on in Puerto Rico that we know of, our team know of, goes back to 1995. So the first thing you have to do is to study the problem, to first of all make people aware of the problem, to scientifically study the problem, and to try to reach public policy across all the parties, across all the political agenda, because we have to do something about it.
Let me ask you this. You have students, and I'm wondering, when you talk to young people, what do they tell you about how they feel being in Puerto Rico? How do they feel about having families, getting married, having kids, or, staying in Puerto Rico? What do they tell you?
Well, yes, it's true. I mean, there is a general trend to try to get the children in safer condition and also with people more mature later in life and so on. But let me tell you something. In Puerto Rico, the main reason of the fertility collapse is not that the people is deciding to have children later. Still, you are going to have that trend, but we have not experienced that trend yet. People is deciding not to have children at all ages. It's not that people is delaying the fact of having children. It's not having children at all. Now, we have to understand what are the economical reasons, the cultural perceptions, the nature of the health, the medical practices. That's something very important. For example, in Puerto Rico is one of the jurisdictions in the whole world where the C-sections is more useful. It's more routinary.
Yeah.
Brazil and Puerto Rico, for example. So,
well, okay.
What are the medical practices?
Let me stop. I want to skip that part. Let me ask you this: what's the Puerto Rican government offering? And incentives. And I apologize. There's a loud noise in the background. I don't know if there's a way for you to get away from that, just so that I can hear you clearly. But I wanted to ask you, what is the Puerto Rican government offering in incentives for residents to have families? We see this in China. We see this in other Asian countries right now, where population has either slowed down, stopped, or gone backwards. They're offering incentives. Is there an incentive from the government to have kids?
Very true. You are completely right. That's why we are trying to get public policy in place to study the problem and to convince our governors and the political parties and society that have to focus on this problem. This is the main problem of the island, and no one is tackling it, you see? And we are raising the voice of alarm to politicians, to social leaders, to everybody, that the speed on which the population is collapsing is really worrisome, that we have to do something about it, that we still have time to do something about it, that other societies and jurisdictions have tried to promote, for example, better conditions in order to have children health and daycare and so on and so forth. And they have been able to at least to make things more stable, to reduce the speed in which the reduction of the fertility is going on. But here, so far, no one is tackling the problem, and we have to do something about it.
So it's a combination of people not having kids and also, again, a lot of people leaving and coming to the U.S. mainland.
Right.
I'm speaking with Luis.
And now the immigration is very volatile. It's volatile. It's not the main reason, as I said. It is volatile. And then with Maria, yes, I mean it increased a lot. It's essentially double. But there has been a rebound in 2019. A lot of people came back. So the immigration is a problem, but it's not the main problem.
Okay.
The main problem runs deeper. It's the fertility problem, which worries us much more. And it's a deeper and more difficult to tackle, you see? And
right.
We have to do it now.
Yes. Again, talking with Luis Perich Guerra, professor at the University of Puerto Rico, again, looking at the population demographics on the island, the territory's population in rapid decline. Perici is examining the ripple effects that could have had on the island long term. So you can read more about this story, by the way, because the Miami Herald did a piece on it. Just go to our social media at WLRN Sundial. You know, I wanted to ask you, because you talked about Maria. There have been hurricanes now, a couple of them. You had the earthquakes.
Right.
You experienced something similar with natural disasters when you were in Venezuela, the Vargas tragedy in 1999. Just briefly remind listeners of what the impact of those floods had and how it changed the economy and the population over a long period of time.
Right. I came here 20 years ago to head the Department of Mathematics. And at that time, I was studying what is called the Vargas tragedy. It was flood slides that had killed over 33,000 people. So I... study also in Puerto Rico the possibility of having these sort of disasters, particularly related to rain, heavy rain. And I discovered 20 years ago that the island had a probability of having a huge rain. I mean, just probabilistically, if you do the computations in the correct way, that the probability of a huge rain, it had been underestimated by the factor of two. Say, if you think that the 100th return period of the world's phenomenon is
then you should do it. It's really 50 years. I mean, the computations in the island were grossly underestimated. Right.
Let me, only because of time, I apologize. I want to jump to this, because if you're telling me that, again, birth rate, fertilities rate in on the island are dropping, and this is the problem for the population dropping. So if this continues, paint me a picture of what Puerto Rico looks like in 10 or 20 years.
In 20 years, we are going to have an island of very, very old people with nobody to take care of them, essentially. And we have to do something about it, and we still have time to do it. The economy is going up, it's going upward now, but you know, the economy, everybody complains, we cannot find man and woman power. And that's because of the situation that we are trying to alert. We have to do something about it. Public policy, we don't want to advance exactly what public policy has to be, but we can advance candidates, possibilities. It's a sensible immigration policy, a possibility, but we have to discuss about it right now. The whole of the society, this is not a political agenda of a particular group. It's a societal problem.
Yeah.
And we can do something about it. You see, if you go to every single area of the economy, they are complaining about the same thing. We cannot find labor.
So, jobs. Well, yeah, nobody wants to have kids if the economy is that weak and you don't know if there's potential for opportunity. So,
right. But now there are opportunities and there is nobody to take that, take that as a labor. And now this is something which you have some feedback effects. If you don't find people in order to keep growing the economy, then the economy is going to continue going down. And then what is this going to stop?
Right.
You see? Now,
this is a fascinating conversation and again, a sad state for what's happening in Puerto Rico. I have to end it there. Again, Dr. Luis Perici Guerra, professor at the University of Puerto Rico, looking at, again, the fact that Puerto Rico's population dropping over the last 10 years. And he's telling us that fertility is the biggest reason. You can learn more about it. Go to our social media at WLRN Sundial. And that is the end of our program for this Tuesday, June 8th. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the FDA has approved a new medication for Alzheimer's for the first time in decades. For millions of Americans, it was welcome news to treat the disease. But some experts have questioned the efficacy of the drug. And it's expensive, by the way, over $50,000. We're going to hear from a University of Miami professor that helped develop the drug. Plus, what's the experience of dating in the midst of the pandemic? Are you out and about going back to dating? We want to hear from you. Join our text club. Just type in the word hello to 786-677-0767. Again, that's 786-677-0767. We want to hear your thoughts on dating in this post-pandemic world. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.